So we are in Parshat Tetzaveh, and this week we also have Parshat Zachar. So I thought it would be good if somehow we try to combine them together, which of course I shouldn't do because they have nothing to do with one another. But the more that I looked at the sources that we're going to consider today, the more that I'm convinced that there is something here, together with a third or maybe a fourth source, that once you put them all together, then they make sense. Although I am not at all convinced that I have completed this analysis, which either means the class will be terrible or means that I'll return to it again, or it means the middle will have some kind of moment of enlightenment. So let's begin. This first source is in Shemot Perek Kaf Ched Pasuk Aleph, chapter 28, verse 1. Va'ata hakrev elecha et Aharon achicha, ve'et banav ito mitoch b'nei Yisrael lecha hanoli, Aharon nadav aviu elazar v'itamar b'nei Aharon. Okay, one of the idiosyncrasies of our Parshat Tetzaveh is the fact that Moshe's name isn't here in the whole parsha. We've spoken about this in the past. The Zohar makes note of this. The Torah, I believe, quotes it, but doesn't quote in the name of the Zohar. The Zohar is the source that actually says this and gives a reason for this. Some explain that because the proximity to Moshe's yahrzeit is the reason why we always read this at this particular time. So Moshe's not here, as it were, and today is Zayin Adar, so today is Moshe's yahrzeit and his birthday, and my father's birthday. Huh? 80th birthday today. So again, this verse begins Va'ata. It's almost, you get the sense that if, and again, this is my imagination, but you almost get the sense that had there not been a problem with saying Moshe, it would have said, like it normally says, V'deber Hashem o Moshe, krev ilech et Aharon. Now, okay, so the first thing that we note is the fact that Moshe's name isn't there, V'ata, and that we won't speak about. What is more interesting, well, I shouldn't say more interesting, what we're going to focus on more is the word hakrev, which means when God is telling Moshe to make a selection or to make an appointment, there are other words that could have been used. I mean, just think for a second the various times, because there are a couple of them, when Moshe is told about the choice of Bezalel. What does it say there? V'karati b'shem Bezalel, right, and so on. You'll discuss it with her afterwards. But she feels bad and she'll make it up to you.
I feel bad too.
No. Let her feel bad. Much better that way. So when it, instead of speaking about appoint him, choose him, it says hakrev elecha, which again, I mean, I think that this is very obvious. What does the word hakrev mean? To bring close. Now, certainly the word is interesting. It's interesting. Well, that's what makes it interesting. It's interesting because we're going to learn that the major purpose of the Kohen Gadol, is going to be to bring korbanot. But that does not, it's not what it means here. It does not mean, and sacrifice your brother, right? It doesn't say that. It says, hakrev elecha. It doesn't say, hakrev limizbeach, right? It doesn't say, hakrev al mizbeach. It says, hakrev elecha. Bring him close to you. Which also, therefore, should help us a lot when we discuss various korbanot, to remember that the root of the word korban is kirva, is one of closeness, and the purpose there is closeness. So the main issue over here is there is this feeling of perhaps unity, of close, of coming close, and so on. And that really becomes the main question as to simply why this is the case. Why is this the term which is being used? And I want to start by looking at a midrash. And the truth is that the midrash is really quite surprising. And let's begin. Source number 2, and you notice the 3 dots in the beginning of the source. It means that this is not the beginning of it. And I played with the idea of giving you more of this midrash beforehand, and it may be worthwhile to look at the earlier section. It says, "Ukishabikesh la'asot HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kohen Gadol, haya Moshe savur shehu naseh Kohen Gadol." When it came time to choose a Kohen Gadol, Moshe thought, was of the opinion, that he would be the one who would be chosen. Omilei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lech Umanali Kohen Gadol. Go and appoint for me a Kohen Gadol. What, by the way, just listening to the words being used here, you realize those are the words that could have been used in the Chumash. Amar lefonav, Rabon Ha'olam, Me'eza Shevet Amaneh Lecha. From which Shevet should I choose? Omilei Mishevet Levi. Choose from Shevet Levi. Oto Asha'a Samach Moshe, Amar Kach Shifti Chaviv. Moshe is happy and he says, "Oh, look, my tribe is beloved." Amalei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Aron Achicha, Hu Lekach Ne'amar Vata Hakrev Elecha Et Aron Achicha. Now, what the Medrash is trying to tell us over here is that Moshe was under the assumption that he is going to be the Kohen, and then when God tells him, "It's not you, but I'll tell you what," meaning he doesn't even say that way. He goes, "We need to appoint a Kohen Gadol, and it's going to be somebody from Shevet Levi." So Moshe's thinking that it's him. No, it's your brother, but bring him close to you. Now maybe what the Medrash is telling us is at this moment there could have been sibling rivalry. There could have been some feelings of resentment, and instead, hakrev elecha, do this in a way that there it will be close. Now, I will mention what is taught in the Midrash before this, that there were a number of other jobs that were given out till this point, and every time there was a job given out, Moshe thought that he should do it. Each time something is mentioned, Moshe thought it should be him. Excuse me? Well, before I get to the trouble delegating, it's exactly. Okay, exactly. Which means the personality of Moshe, the personality of Moshe is one of humility. Right? And that, by the way, that's not a midrash, that's not some rabbinic interpretation. It says that in the Chumash, right? Moshe is a man of incredible humility. So now, how does Moshe's humility work with his feeling, "Oh, I should be the one who should be the Kohen Gadol"? How does that work with humility? But I'm saying it's much worse than that. How does it work together with each of the positions which present themselves, Moshe's feeling that, okay, this really, I'm the one who should be doing it. Now the first thing is that real humility, right? Real humility does not mean that a person should think that they are incapable, right? Real humility is that you shouldn't think that you deserve some kind of special treatment because of your capabilities. But and I'll even be clearer. There's a wonderful story with, I can tell different people, but I'll pick people that I think some of you would know and know as being humble. Rav Moshe Feinstein was a very, very humble man, right? He was a very, very, very humble man. And somebody saw Rav Moshe riding on a train in New York. And they went over to him. You know, you see, they refer to him in third person, the Rosh Yeshiva, and they would go over and say, "You know, where are you going?" So he says, "Oh, I'm on the way to a wedding of the son of a student of mine. The student passed away, and I got an invitation." So now, here's a little background to the story. Background to the story is that normally if you invite somebody like the stature of Rav Moshe and you would expect him to come, you would at least offer to bring him whatever. Over here, again, the student had passed away and then the son sent an invitation never thinking that Rav Moshe would actually come. Rav Moshe, on the other hand, felt that he wanted to honor this person, but he didn't have any other way of getting there. So he got on the train to go. So now, why is he going? He's going because he knows that his being there is going to bring joy to this chatan and this kala. Why? Because he knows that he's Rav Moshe Feinstein. On the other hand, even though that he knows that his going there is going to bring joy to them, he doesn't go ask, okay, now send me a car service or send me, you know, I want to send me a plane or send me business seats or whatever. No, Rav Moshe knows that he should be there, but he doesn't ask for any special treatment. So I'm saying that story, I think, encapsulates it. Yeah. The problem is, what if you happen to know that you can do this best? I'm saying that becomes a problem. What happens if you happen to know that this is something that you can do better than anybody else, and therefore you think that you should do it? So again, this is not a question of not being able to delegate. This is a question that Moshe has been thrust into a leadership position. What he doesn't necessarily know yet is how, okay, I'll put it this way, what is the job description of the position that he's taken? Which means, as far as Moshe knows, the Kohen Gadol, when he first hears about it, is yet another description of what it is that he has to do. And for that matter, the collecting the materials for the Mishkan, and perhaps building the Mishkan, and the judicial process. I mean, you see Moshe doing lots and lots of things, and that's part of what the earlier section of this Midrash did. But I think there may be another element, okay? I think there's maybe a second element to this. And that is not just Moshe's not knowing what his job description is or Moshe's feeling that he could perhaps do this best. I think it may be a sense of ultimately how to create a situation of unity. Now let me explain myself. We find at various places in history, including but not exclusively, Rabbinic Judaism, we find times where there is tension between church and state, as it were, or between the Kohanim and between the Malchut, or between you have the Sanhedrin and the Malchut. Again, you can look at your various lessons in history. You have different times where the ruling party, the judicial arm, the priestly arm don't necessarily work together. And it could well be that what Moshe is thinking about when he is willing to accept upon himself these various positions is that this is going to create unity within the people, because there won't be these various factions which would then be, you know, attacking one another. Keeping these different possibilities in mind, let's now proceed. Let's continue in this midrash now. It then goes on to say, Rabbanan Amri, Kol Arbim Shana, I'm in the next line in source number two, the first two words are not underlined. He tells him to choose Aaron. Rabbanan Amri, there is an opinion by the rabbis, Kol Arbim Shana Shayisro Bamidbar, Shimesh Moshe Bekuna Gedula, that Moshe did have the status of a Kohen Gadol during those 40 years. There, and then the next couple of lines in this source give us other opinions to how long Moshe may have been of the status of a Kohen Gadol. Part 2 of the Midrash, this was Aleph, this is Shmot Rabba, Parshat Lamed Zayin, that was Aleph, and now Bet. Dover Acher, Dalet Aleph is Dover Acher. Here is another opinion, what does it mean, Vatakre Velecha? Omru B'shashi Yerad Moshe Misinai V'ra Yisrael Ba'oto Ma'aseh, when Moshe came down to Mount Sinai, and he saw the Jews doing that deed. What is that deed that is referring to? That it doesn't even, right, is a little different from the newspapers report it, right? They said, I'm doing that deed. He beat Aharon, v'yamakish alav bikornas, and Aaron was banging away with a hammer. That's the way that I understood this. V'hu lo nitkaven ela le'akvam. Aharon's intention was to delay them. And I think it's very clear, if you look at Aaron's behavior within the building of the golden calf, I think it's very clear that Aaron's intention is to delay. I mean, if you read, and it doesn't even have to be a very careful read, Perek Lamed Lamed Bet. You don't have this in front of you unless you have a Tanakh, a Chumash. Vayar am kiboshesh Moshe l'redit min ahar. The people see that Moshe delayed in coming down from the mountain. Vayikahel ha'am al aharon. Now what does that mean, vayikahel ha'am al aharon? Yeah, it's like they gather on him. I mean, just the way this is described, you feel and you hear a great deal of pressure. Vayomer lav kuma se lanu Elohim asher yechu lefaneinu ki ze Moshe ish asher aleinu me'aretz Yitzrayim lo yadanu mehayalo. It make for us a deity because the man Moshe took us out. We don't know what happened to him. But Yom Olayim Aaron Perku Nizmei Zahav Shebas No Nisheichem Beneichem Benotechem Aviu Alai. Bring me the jewelry of your wives, your children, your sons, your daughters. It sounds that right there sounds like a delaying tactic. Again, this is not reading into it. Right there sounds like a delaying tactic. Again, that's the first thing that we're told Aaron does. The next thing it says that they poured it off and they brought it all over to him. And vayikach mi adam v'yatzar oto b'cheret. So then he's knocking away, and he's doing what he's doing. Then it says vayaasehu ego masecha, but they make a golden calf. That's in plural. Vayomru, and they then say what they say. Vayar Aharon. Aaron sees what they did. Vayiven mizbeach lefanav. He builds a mizbeach, which is again a stalling tactic. Vayomer chag laHashem. What's the next word? Machar. Tomorrow we'll serve tomorrow. And it's also interesting that he does not say Elohim, like they did when they pointed out that he says La Hashem. So Aaron's behavior over here very much seems to be one of trying to push it off and to delay it. They apparently are very enthusiastic, so it doesn't work all that well. When Moshe comes down, he sees what he does, what he did. V'hulo nitkaven elala akvam ad sheyared Moshe u'Moshe savur she'Aaron shutaf imahem v'ya b'libo alav. That Moshe had in his heart against Aaron, because as far as he's concerned, Aaron is a part of this. Amar lei Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe yodea ani kavanato shel Aaron eich hayta l'tova. God says, I know what was in Aaron's heart, and what was in his heart was something which was he was actually hoping, for something which was positive. And then he gives a mashal to this, and we'll skip the mashal. You can read it on your own. Kach bisha, where it's underlined, Sha'amu Yisrael Aharon, kum ase lanu Elohim, amar lahem perkun nizmei zahav. That's the delay. When they ask, make us for a god, he says, give me your jewelry. Amu lahem, he said to them, ani kohen, ani ase oto, umakri lefanav. He goes, I'm a kohen, I will make it and I will bring it in front of you. Aaron is the one who speaks, and Aaron says, I'm a Kohen. By the way, that's very interesting, because I don't know how Aaron knew at this point that he was in fact a Kohen. Aaron says, I'm a Kohen, which, as I said, I will leave that question to you. But he says, therefore, let me do it. V'hu lo nitasek el l'akvan ad shivo Moshe. His whole intention was to delay until Moshe came. Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Aaron, yodea ani heichaita kavanatcha. I know what your intentions were. Chayecha einani mashlit et al korbanoteim shel banai ela ata shenema v'ata hakriv elecha. Which means that this midrash is pointing out, and again, one of the difficult things of reading Parshat Truma and Tetzaveh, Kitisa, is to know the sequence. And we can't every year, every time, just deal with the sequence of events, but the sequence comes up. Is Aaron's selection before the golden calf or after the golden calf? This midrash is telling us very clear, it's after the golden calf. And it's telling us something which, it's worthwhile noting, that Aaron's selection is because of his part in the golden calf. Not in spite of, because of it. That Aaron's intention is l'shem shamayim, and therefore God says, I know man's intention. I know what Aaron's thoughts were. Which itself very interesting. And Aaron there says, I will do this, but why does he offer to do it? He says, I'm a Kohen, I'll do this. Why does he offer to do this? For one reason. And what's that? To delay them. So God says, therefore, you'll be my Kohen. It's because of your heroism, because of your willingness to delay them. And I do want to point out one more thing, which I find interesting. A lot of the laws of Korbanot are dependent upon proper intention. The korban has to be done with the proper kavanah. So it's so interesting over here that God is saying, it could be that you perceive Aaron's actions to be inappropriate, right? He sees Aaron involved, but God says, no, I know what the kavanah is. When it comes to the korban, the kavanah is really going to be the important thing. And even when you think he was bringing korban for avodah zarah, no, the korban he was bringing was for me. I mean, which means the actions that he was doing was for me. His actions were pure, his thoughts were pure, so therefore Aaron is appropriate to be a Kohen, and I want him to be my Kohen for the reasons of the Egel Azav. So I'm saying that's what is very interesting about this Midrash. But what do we see? What is the point? That there is a schism between Moshe and Aaron at this point. There's a break between them. We had never noticed this before. And this is something which is not just the Midrash's imagination. This is something which Moshe actually records later on in Sefer Devarim. And he says, I was mad, I was angry at Aaron for being involved in this. I mean, the Chumash attests to this later on about Moshe's anger. And that's something that we had never seen before. In fact, quite the opposite. We had seen this, you know, Sameach Bilibo, we'd seen this joy and this gladness and this unity between the two of them, and that to a large extent is what made Sefer Shemot very different from Sefer Bereshit, where we had all of these siblings that don't get along. Over here we have Moshe and Aaron getting along, but there's something which breaks that. The point that we find it broken, the point that we find tension, and perhaps it could be broken, is the point of the Egel, and Moshe is upset with Aaron. And God says, excuse me, everything that Aaron did was L'shem Shemayim. Yeah.
But why, I never thought of it before, but with all this good intention, he never says anything. Why isn't he criticized for not at least trying to persuade the people? He could have delayed them, he could have made up something about how that we can do it tonight or tomorrow.
Well, he did say that.
Yeah.
He does say that. But he says, Chag L'Hashem Machar.
But why doesn't he say we shouldn't do it?
So Rashi, quoting the Gemara, it says that Aaron sees, Vayar, right? He sees, just one second, Vayar Aharon. It's a very strange verse. I am in chapter 32, verse 5, Pasuk Hey. Vayar Aharon, and Aaron sees, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav. What does he see? Those two words are actually inexplicable from the verse. It should say, you know, Aaron wants the delay, or Aaron sees. Rashi, who feels this, says, no, that's not what I want. That was not the Rashi I was looking for. The Chazal say that what he sees is that he sees that they had killed Hor. They had killed Hor. Okay, that's one of the mysteries over here. Right before Moshe goes up, back in chapter, killed someone named Hor. Back in chapter 24, when Moshe is about to go up, he leaves them with instructions. Just one second. I'm in Perek Kaf Dalid, right, chapter 24, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayakam Moshe v'Yoshua mishartó, vayal Moshe el har ha'elokim. It's actually interesting. It mentions two people, but Moshe goes up. So where is Yoshua? Vayakam Moshe v'Yoshua mishartó, vayal Moshe el har ha'elokim. So they seem to leave the camp. Where's Yoshua? We'll catch up with Yoshua later. Ve'ele zekinim amar, and he said, these are the order, again, he said he can't delegate. Who said this before? He's delegating now. Ve'ele zekinim, and look how it worked out. Ele zekinim amar, he said, shvu lanu bezeh ad asher nashuv aleichem. Wait here, and I'll be back. Vinei Aharon v'chur imachem, I am placing two people in charge, Aharon and Chur. Mibal dvarim, whoever has any problems, yigash aleihem, go to them. So, for all of you who had a problem, Moshe did leave somebody in charge. Now, the mystery over here is, and this is one of these great mysteries of Tanakh, Hur is never mentioned again. And in the episode of the Egel, Hur is not there. The Gemara says, based by Yar Aharon, Aharon sees, what did he see? They came over to Hur first. They came over to Hur and they said, Hur, make for us an eagle. Or make for us a god. And Hur says to them, over my dead body. And they say, fine. And they kill Hur. Aharon sees that Hur was killed, and then he goes into a completely different strategy, which means Hur stands up against them. Aharon says, sure, you know. But basically, you can look at the last 10 Israeli prime ministers, how they deal with Washington. Right? So, right? No, some say absolutely not. Anything you want, no. That was Shamir was like that. And some just say, sure, anything, but then just ignore them. And then they do what they want anyway. So the question is, what is the better strategy over here? So it could be that the strategy of Hur is more idealistic and is heroic, but he also paid with his life for this. Aharon is far more diplomatic, is perhaps politically more astute, and he survives to the next day, but not only that, God recognizes what he did. So I'm saying Hur is in the background of this entire story. So let's keep that in mind, because we basically have over here four characters. The four characters are Moshe, who goes up the mountain, Yeshua, who goes halfway up the mountain, Aharon, who stays below, and Hur, who has disappeared. So I'm saying those are the four characters who are now part of the sin of the golden calf. Of course, Moshe, we would like to say, has no responsibility, unless you want to blame him. So, you know, Moshe was late coming down. Maybe his being late had to be with his adding an extra day before Har Sinai. I'm just saying, it's just something to think about, but let's not blame Moshe at all. We don't like to blame Moshe. Yehoshua, we don't want to blame him at all. Yeshua, he's like someplace between heaven and earth. Right? Moshe's in heaven, Yeshua's someplace in between. Hur is no place to be seen, but he may very well be a victim. And then we want to put all the blame on Aharon. But I'm just saying that there are a couple of other people here who we are very intrigued to know what their role is. Okay, so now keep that in mind, and we're going to place that on the side for the moment. Explaining this pasuk, v'atah hakrevi lecha, so we saw in the Midrash a couple of different approaches. The Ibn Ezra in source number 3 says the following. V'atah, remember, atah hakrevi lecha, you're going to bring to you. So now we already have one approach to this. What's this approach? That Moshe perhaps wanted all of these parts of government to be within him, then you'll have unity, we'll have more peace. Moshe perhaps thought Aharon was not worthy. Moshe has had a fight with Aharon, and God has said, no, Aharon is okay, lehefech. Source number 3, v'atah, ba'avur hayot Moshe kohen, HaKohanim Bitchila. Moshe was the first Kohen, which is, again, is interesting because we normally don't look at it that way, but a lot of the Avodah, he gives it to Moshe first, then Moshe then brings Aharon involved in this. Alkein Tam HaKrev Elecha. That's why I bring him to you, which means it's almost like saying, make Aharon your apprentice. Moshe is the first Kohen and learns how to do the Avodah, the service directly from God. Make him your apprentice. V'kfar Ramazdi Lecha. And I don't know if you know that I love Ibn Ezra. I don't understand anything he writes, but I love the Ibn Ezra, and it's one of the things on my list to look at much more in depth. The reason why I really can't is because so much of his commentary deals with diktuk, which will fly right over my head. But the Ibn Ezra, I don't want to say is coy. I was always going to say play games, but that's not nice. He's very coy, and whenever he has something good to say, he doesn't say it. He says, he'll hint at it, he'll almost say it. He says, there's a secret here, I can't tell you. So it's great. Over here, V'kvar Ramazti Lecha, I already gave you a hint about it. Okay, so, and what are you saying? Thank you very much. I already gave you a hint. Lama Nivchar Aharon, why Aharon was chosen. Lahakti Sho Lashem, Bavur Kvod Mishpachat Nachshon. He was chosen out of the honor of the family of Nachshon. Now, hold on a second. That the Kohanim should bring about kapara, atonement for the Jewish people. And don't speak about Moshe. Ki borei Moshe would have run away. Umi ivrit. I'm telling you, I have no idea what he's talking about. Va'od ki tareach kol Yisrael Moshe l'lamdam ha-mitzvot v'ladun kol dever kasher. Besides, Moshe was too busy. Moshe was teaching the people. Again, he has other roles. His job description has other things. He's judging the people. Now, you also actually know that in terms of judging the people, there he does eventually learn how to delegate. Moshe's too busy teaching. So the question is, you know, on Yom Kippur, could Moshe also have gone into the Kodesh Kodashim or not? That's really what it comes down to. But he says, no, there's a secret over here. Now, he says, I already hinted to you the secret. When did he hint to us? He doesn't tell you. So I'll tell you when he hinted it to you. Look at source number 4, Shmot Perek Vav. V'yikach Aharon et Elisheva bat Aminadav achot Nachshon lo le'isha. Right? There's actually more information here than we normally get. First of all, as many of you know, many wives are not mentioned in Tanakh at all. She's mentioned. Not only is she mentioned, her father's mentioned. Not only is her father mentioned, her brother's mentioned. And basically we have over here too much information. Not in a negative way, but this is just, why is it telling us so much? V'teled lo et Nadav ve'et Aviv et Elazar ve'et Itamar. The Ibn Ezra writes, V'yikach Aharon, hizkir eshet Aharon, bavur kavod Elazar. It mentions the wife out of the honor of Elazar. V'yizkir achot Nachshon bavur sod hakuna, and it mentions that she is the sister of Nachshon because of the secret of kehuna. So this was the remez, the secret of kehuna. That's all that he wants us to know. Now, it is left therefore for readers and students and followers of the Ibn Ezra to figure out what he's talking about. One of the best books which deal with the Ibn Ezra, it's actually the only one who really does, is this edition, which I don't have. Nobody please steal it from the library here. I found it on HebrewBooks.org, which is very easy to photocopy the page, but I figured it's better to see the book. It's called the Mechulka Ke Yehuda. It's an entire book. It has the Chumash in it. It has Rashi, Targum, Unculus, Ibn Ezra, and then two commentaries on the Ibn Ezra, one source and one explanations. Okay, it was probably written, different parts of it were published between 1910 and 1928. The fellow who did it, his name was, he was a Jew who lived in Minsk, Yehuda Leib Krinsky was his name, and he was a very wealthy man who made his living in the timber business. And then he decided to support yeshivas and kolels and so on, and he decided to write a book. The jury's still out on him to what extent he was what was called a maskil or not, but who cares? It's on the one hand the best book on the Ibn Ezra, but on the other hand, you can't trust books because it's his opinion. So we're going to read what he writes after that whole... You have it in source number 6. So what is the secret? This is his note, number 123 on that chapter, right, Perek Vav. Shehi levnei Aharon, velo levnei Moshe. That what is the secret of the kuhuna? The kuhuna goes to the children of Aharon, not to the children of Moshe. Ki Moshe nalo nalo kuhuna bavur tzipora. Why did Moshe not get the kuhuna? Because of his wife. Why? Well, Moshe married a convert. A convert, a Kohen can't marry a convert. So therefore, because of Moshe's wife, his children couldn't be a Kohen.
Any Kohen?
No, this is true later on. No. Till this day, a convert is a very holy person, but if a Kohen marries a convert, then the children aren't Kohenim.
But it's about the specific one. Not just
let's continue reading. Let's continue. By the way, what can you say about Tzipora? She was a bat Kohen. Right? Because she's so I could say, no, she was even better. She's a bat Kohen. It says Kohen Midian. But listen to what he says. V'hizkir, sorry, where am I? Bavur tzipor shabanea dom in la'acheha. So he doesn't give the real halachic reasoning. It's actually the Gemara, and it's actually Rashi on the same pasuk. Rashi says that why does it mention Nachshon? To tell you that Aaron's children will be, when you marry somebody, you look at the brothers. And look at Nachshon as this wonderful guy. By the way, I had spoken about this, I think I wrote about this as well, that Nachshon actually acts quite impetuously. What does he do? He's the first one who jumps into the water. And then you see Nadav and Avihu also acting impetuously, so perhaps that's coming from Nachshon. It's also significant that the day that Nadav and Avihu die is the eighth day. It's the day that Nachshon brings his korban. So it's the day that he's being rewarded for his impetuousness, and then they're impetuous on the same day. Right? It's very nice what I said. I actually should have just said the same thing again. I could have made a whole shiur out of it. Okay. Right. No, I think I wrote this already. Anyway.
Why would you say, though, just before, it says that Elisha was mentioned because of Kavod Elazar?
Because he's going to be the Kohen Gadol. He's eventually going to take over to know that the Kohen Gadol's mother is Elisheva. Now, he says because of the brothers. By the way, whether Tzipora actually had brothers or not is quite debatable. As far as I recall, we're told that that Yitro had seven daughters. Wasn't that whole part of the story? On the other hand, later on, we have Chotein Moshe, Reuel Chotein Moshe, so it's not clear if Reuel and Yitro is the same person or if he's the son, so I won't debate him on that. V'nana kuna la'aron bavur shenasa achot nachshon ki hu nasi levnei Yehuda. So the reason that the kohuna goes to Aaron is because Aaron's wife is the sister of Nachshon. Well, it's the wife's yichus. So, right. So you're reading this saying, what are you talking about? By the way, it's a very nice interpretation, unless it's not. I don't think it's what the Ibn Ezra said. Go back and read the words of the Ibn Ezra. V'yizkir achot Nachshon bavur sod hakohuna. There's a secret, soda kuna. By the way, if this was the whole soda kuna, he just should have said it. By the way, I told you that Ibn Ezra does this all, I don't say this all the time, but there are dozens of times he says, oh, this is a sod, and he can't explain what it is. Which, by the way, then brings everybody and their brother to explain all kinds of nefarious things in the commentary. This is what he really meant over here. From biblical criticism and onward, everything is in Ibn Ezra. Why? Because he writes in such an interesting way. He goes, oh, there's a secret over here. Okay. It's a great way to sell books. Right.
What's the point of writing that?
It's great, isn't it? Okay. I told you when I read that I wasn't really clear. I could look up over here what he says about it, but no. My point is that he's. Right. It could be. I'm just not sure why the relevance, though. But it could be that there are those who claim that he already lost the kahuna at that point. Okay, look. Yeah, but this is before that. Again, I don't want to be irreverent, but my point is that the Ibn Ezra is difficult to understand, and just because this Rabbi Krinsky, who I don't know was even really a rabbi or not, wrote a book, doesn't necessarily mean that everything he writes in the book is necessarily correct, necessarily the case. There's another book, which is called the Sefer Brit Kohuna, which I thought that was great. Sefer Brit Kohunat Olam, written by one of the Hasidic leaders, one of the students of the Magen Mezrich, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Katz, who died in 1788. He writes towards the bottom, Hayabo Sod Keter Malchut. Sorry, let's read a little bit. Hamakriv biyom arishon, shehu korban nachshon, shehu biyom kalot Moshe mamash. Which means that the first person who brings the korban, when the nisiyim bring it, is going to be Nachshon. V'hu olel gabe kol nisiyim behakravato, and he is beyond all the other nisiyim. Bishmini l'miluim, on the eighth day of the miluim, that's the first day where the nisiyim bring their offerings. Liotam kulam nisiyim hayab. Why does Nachshon go first? Hayab osod keter malchut. What is the secret that he has? He has sod keter malchut. So, if you have no idea what he's talking about, look at source number 3. Page 3. The Eila Toldot Peretz. Do you remember Peretz? You sing about him every week? In Lechododi. Ben Partzi. Who is Ben Partzi? Who are you referring to? And we'll look inside. The Eila told of Peretz. Peretz alidit Chetzron. So literally, who's Ben Partzi? It's Chetzron. Continue. The Chetzron alidit Ram. The Ram alidit Aminadav. Aminadav alidit Nachshon. The Nachshon alidit Selma. The Selma alidit Boaz. Boaz alidit Ovid. Ovid alidit Yishai. The Yishai alidit David. So when you say Ben Partzi, who are you referring to? What? David or Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben David. That is Ben Partzi. So now you realize that Nachshon is the family of Malchut. Zesod Malchut. Do you realize then what the Ibn Ezra is really telling us? That what is special about Aaron that Moshe doesn't have? And remember he said it's for Eleazar. What does Eleazar have that Moshe doesn't have and Moshe's children don't have? It's not that Moshe married a convert. It's not anything else. What is it? What's the point? It's that it's the convergence. It's the convergence of the Kahuna and Malchut in one. Now that becomes so interesting in light of what I said was Moshe's, you know, the possible meaning of that Midrash in the beginning, that Moshe wanted to hold on to the different elements and bring them together. Over here we find quite the opposite, that Aaron is the one who ends up bringing at least the two of the major elements, naming Malchut and Kahuna, and come in one. Realize that from Nachshon, all the Kohanim Gedolim and all of the Melachim descend. I said from Nachshon. From Nachshon, Right. I'm saying from Nachshon. Again, that's something unbelievable. You start to think about it. From Nachshon, all the Malchut Beit David and all the Kohanim Gedolim come from Nachshon. Sorry. From his father. Sorry. From Aminadav. Correct. From Aminadav. Right. From him come both lines. So Elisheva, Bat Aminadav, Achot Nachshon. So saying, okay, over here is where you have the two lines breaking up. That's why Nachshon is going to continue the Malchut, and over here is going to continue the Kahuna. But over here you have the convergence of two. That, I think, is what the Ibn Ezra is really referring to. When he talks about Sod Kahuna, and again, he's talking Sod Kahuna, and over here we saw this other source telling about the Sod Malchut. We realize that the Sod Malchut and the Sod Kahuna are actually intertwined. Okay. By the way, Kalev ben Yefuna is also in this whole thing, but I'm not going to get into Kalev right now. We'll skip those. Now let's go over to Milchemet. Now that we're running out of time, let's take a look at Milchemet Amalek. Source number 11. Vayavo Amalek v'lachem Yisrael b'rifidim. Vayom Moshe el Yehoshua b'char lenu anashim v'tzei lachem Amalek. Machar anochi nitzav arosh hageva umatelu elokim biyadi. We're going, Amalek arrives, and Moshe delegates. Who does he send? He sends Yehoshua. It's also interesting, he says, Machar. And just keep that in mind, because that's also later on. Chag L'Hashem, he goes, tomorrow. And Moshe goes up to the mountain with the mate elokim in his hand. Vayas Yehoshua kasher amar lo Moshe. And here you have Yehoshua following Moshe's orders, which is unlike what happens when, in terms of the background of the ego, where Moshe's orders are not followed. Lilachem ba'amalek, right? Sorry, right. Kasher amar lo Moshe lilachem ba'amalek. U'Moshe Aharon v'chur alu rosh ha-giv'ah. And our three other protagonists all go up to the top of the mountain. Now, Moshe represents... let's make this easier. Aaron represents Kahuna, although we may not know it yet. Hur represents what? Hur represents Malchut. Why? Okay. Hur as well represents Malchut. Hur is from Yehuda. We'll see in a second what happened over here. So therefore, Moshe, who's on the right hand and who's on the left hand? I always ask that, and nobody ever knows the answer, because it doesn't say any place. But I did find a Zohar, which I'll show you somebody quoting in a moment, that says that Aaron was on the right and Hur was on the left. I found such a source that says that Aaron is on the right and Hur is on the left, and they are supporting Moshe's hands. V'yakasheri Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael v'kasheini yachido v'gavar malek. Yidei Moshe kvedim v'yikhu, again plural, Aaron and Hur, Evan v'yasimu tachtav, v'yeshav alev, Aaron v'chur tamchu biyadav, they support Moshe, b'ze achad mize achad, v'yadav emuna ad bo ha-shemesh. Over here you have a unity of Moshe who represents Torah, and you can argue that Moshe is a melech, and you can argue that Moshe is a kohen. Right? Which means Moshe is all of these things at this point, but Moshe is the Sanhedrin. Moshe is Torah. Moshe, right? Moshe is the Kohen. Moshe is the Melech. Moshe is everything right now. But over here, I'm not going to use the word delegate at this point. But Moshe's being supported. Excuse me?
It's like a unity.
That's exactly what the word that I was looking for. Over here, the defeat of Amalek requires this unity to take place. Which means the fight against Amalek required these different factions, Malchut, Kahuna, Torah, coming together, and really, when they're supporting his hands, they become as one. Do you understand what this image that I'm saying here? What happens by the Cheta Egel? We have the opposite taking place. By the Cheta Egel, we have Moshe, and you know, again, Moshe's in heaven, Yeshua's halfway there, but it's very interesting. Yeshua hears sounds of war. What I was referring to the very beginning, that I said that I wasn't sure exactly how things connect, the description of Yehoshua and Moshe, when Moshe comes down, is very similar to a lot of the words over here. He hears sounds of war going on. Maybe he thinks Amalek came back. Maybe he thinks, you know, something else going on. But the other two elements, Hur has disappeared completely. Now you know why. Hur has disappeared completely. And Aaron seems to be working for the other side, as it were. Look at source 13, the Yalkut Reuveni. Yalkut Reuveni is a mystical source. B'milchemet Amalek ha'Aaron Hur Yehoshua Moshe. V'siman, and how can you remember this? Matovu manaim shevet achim gam yachad. Why did he write achim like this? You know, that is the exact idea, is that it's the unity, that's brotherhood, that's fraternity, that is what defeats Amalek. What is Achim? Do you all say it here? Aharon, Hur, Yoshua, Moshe. That is the unity, that is, and again, that is exactly what I was trying to show you, is there by the fight against Amalek, but is not there by the Cheta Egel, and now we've suffered, we've lost something, and now we have to come back. Hakrev lecha Aaron. No, we have to now try to create a merger. Look at what he says right afterwards. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, emche et zecher Amalek. How do you destroy Amalek? B'tevat emche et zecher Amalek. Nirmaz misha asu v'yasu milchama Amalek. This is a remez. It's a hint to who has destroyed and who will destroy Amalek. B'rishonah haya Aaron Moshe Hur. Emche. Aharon, Moshe, Hur. And the hey is for the Shekhinah that comes and merges with them. Vot hey hi ha-Shekhinah, shesta milchama, ve'im hasar shelo, and the spiritual powers of Amalek. Ve'archar kach hi, Esther, Mordechai, Charvona. Ve'ot hey. Uv'gula achrona ye, Eliyahu, Mashiach, and I don't know what he's referring to afterwards. So you can figure that out on your own. But he sees that this idea, emche, right? I know you all hate Gematriot and hate all these things, but Purim is coming and you need something to say. But it's very interesting that he sees, again, on the one hand, Achim. Look at source 14 now, the Kehilat Yaakov. Kehilat Yaakov is an encyclopedia of Kabbalistic ideas. Everyone should have one at home. Nachshon ben Aminadav b'chinat smol. he refers to something which is left. Again, Kabbalistic literature very often deals right-handed, left-handed, right side, left side. He's the left side. That is based on the Zohar v'Adchanan. Yadcha hachazaka da nachshon. Uma sha'amar b'zohar b'shalach chur l'smol. But earlier it said that chur was on the left side. Uma sha'amar b'pashrat chukat chur l'smol. V'amri l'nachshon. There it says, oh, chur is on the left side. No, nachshon is on the left side. Shnehem emet. They're both true. D'mitchila hayachur u'kishenerag nase nachshon b'mkomo. Kamosha Katav Mikdash Melach. Mikdash Melach is written by a Rav Buzaglo. It's a commentary to the Zohar. Everyone should have that at home as well. Ulafisha Gvura Bechinat Yitzchak. Okay, we'll leave the rest of it. Basically, what he's saying over here is that Nachshon achieves his significance only after Chur has disappeared, which means Chur, I can assure you, is from Yehuda. How do I know he's from Yehuda? Well, you all know he's from Yehuda. Right, Bitzalel ben Uri ben Hur l'shevet Yehuda, l'matei Yehuda. Right, he's from the. He is the significant person from Matei Yehuda. He's the significant person, a descendant of Yehuda. He is the man who would or should be king. That's who Hur is. Hur is the man who should be king. What unfortunately happens to our first king? We kill him. Right, that is what the Gemara says. We kill the man who should. And what did he do to deserve to be king? He tried to stop us from sinning. Right, and that meaning, realize it's not just that we made an egel. We killed the man who tried to stop us from making an egel. That's. But who is this man? He's not any guy who happened to be walking down the road. He is Malchut Beit David, in potential. Later on, the person who becomes the progenitor of Malchut Beit David in reality is Nachshon, who then becomes the Nasi from Shevet Yehuda, and he's the replacement, which means Nachshon is mentioned with, when it talks about who Aaron will marry, but I don't believe he's mentioned again until Sefer Bamidbar. I mean, you know the Midrashim of him jumping in the water and so on. I don't believe he's mentioned again in Sefer Shemot and Vayikra and so on. I don't believe he's mentioned again until we get to Sefer Bamidbar, and he's the Nasi of Shevet Yehuda. What he is saying over here, right. I said he's mentioned there. I said aside from that, I don't think he's mentioned again. That's exactly what I said. But what the Kehilat Yaakov is telling us over here is that they're both referred to in the same way in the Zohar. So what's the significance of this? Again, and they're the ones on the left side of Moshe, as it were. What is the significance of this? The significance is that one replaces the other, which means this should help us to understand what the significance of Hur was, and therefore what the significance of the murder of Hur was, which means we had over there on the mountain, fighting against Amalek, we had this unity between, again, Malchut Beit David, Yehuda, between Moshe, who represents Torah, head of the Sanhedrin, as it were, and between Aaron, Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua down below represents one more element. He, of course, is from Shevet Ephraim, from Yosef, which means that he is the forerunner of Mashiach ben Yosef. So having all of these elements right there, that the unity between them, again, Yehoshua is following Moshe's orders. There's unity. Hur and Aaron are supporting Moshe. They're standing as one. All four of them together, what do they represent? What's the word now? You won't forget this. Achim. All four together is Achim, which means ultimately, to be able to be successful, we need all four together. This may be what Moshe's concern is when he's saying, okay, I'll be the one who'll do this. I'll do this. Which means he recognizes that there needs to be unity. There's two ways of creating unity. One way of creating unity is to take all the power for yourself. The other way of creating unity is somehow dividing the power, but still be working towards a common goal. By Milchemet Amalek, we succeeded in doing that. And that's why that becomes almost this incredible. It's not just that Amalek attacked us, it's that we were able to respond in the way that we were supposed to respond. That's a part of it. But you also realize something else during that war. Moshe couldn't do it himself. How do I know he couldn't do it himself? Right? He needed those others to support him. Now, when it comes time to build the Mishkan, Moshe again is willing to do it by himself. God says, no. Aaron will take his position. As far as the position of Hur, who's not here, Nachshon, we'll come back. But he's telling us now the secret of Aaron. What's the secret of Aaron? The secret of Aaron is that he has his son, Eleazar, when he'll be coming, he has both from Yehuda and from Levi, both from Aminadav and from Aaron. Together, he has this unity. Again, later on down the line, Malchut Beit David will emerge. It's not there yet. But in the meantime, we have Aaron representing a little bit more. But what is necessary? What's necessary? Again, Aaron represents both Aaron and, right, and both the Kuna and the Malchut. Even though you don't think of it as Malchut, he represents both. What does God say to Moshe? Hakrev lecha Aaron. Bring him close to you and create unity. And that becomes exactly the point. That in order for this building, in order for this to work, we need them to be gathered together. As you see, I had a lot more sources here, or at least some more sources we didn't get to. As I said in the beginning, B'li Neder, Tzrichim Lachzor Lezeh, in the proper time. Next week is Purim, so I'm sure you'll all be too drunk to have class. It's Purim, well, it's Purim where I live, so. Anybody who, yeah?